Hello and welcome to the Common Geeking Program, a book club or common reading program for geek culture. Each episode we have a topic that four people will discuss from their own geeky, nerdy perspectives. Joining me this episode are... Jeff, go first.
Hi, my name is Jeff, and this week I'm going to be repping 2014 movie Boyhood.
Laura, go next.
I am Laura Kramer, and I am a little bit congested, so sorry about that. This week I'm going to be repping The Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time.
Time will go last.
Hi, I'm Taimul Chowdhury, or Chowder, whichever you prefer. And I'll be repping Shovel Knight, which is
And I'm your host, Edward Ryan, yep. And for this episode's topic, I selected Guardians of the Galaxy. Theme of this episode is nostalgia. I do have a small confession to make before we begin the episode.
So do I. I'll go second.
Okay. If you guys also have confessions, yeah.
Oh shit, now I gotta think of something to confess.
So I was trying really hard to come up with an episode topic, but I had no ideas. I had one idea, but it's gonna take like a lot of planning, and I had like a day. I mean, I had a lot of time, but I didn't do anything with it, so I had like a day. So I'm just like, oh no, I need an episode. And Liz is like, hey, Eddie, what's going on? And I'm like, oh, I'm trying really hard to think of an episode. And then she thought for like maybe half a second. She was like, what about Guardians of the Galaxy? You could talk about nostalgia. And I was like, yo, that's fucking perfect.
I watched Guardians of the Galaxy 2 on Sunday.
Nice. Very good. Is that your confession, Jeffrey?
Was not. I can think of a better one than that. Let's hear Laura's. I'll come up with something better.
Right, Laura, what's your confession?
My confession is that I did not have time to watch the movie since yesterday, so I haven't seen it since it came out.
Wait, but have you seen it at all?
Yes, I did see it. I did see it. But I'm not going to know any of the names of any of the songs you're saying them, so it's going to be super awesome.
That's okay. And Tamil, what's your confession?
My confession is that it's midterms weeks, and I am incredibly stressed out.
Midterms?
Or not midterms, finals. Finals.
Christ, you guys are on a much different schedule than we are.
I am just that stressed out. I can't make heads of tails of anything.
And knuckles.
I don't miss school.
And I hate it. Every minute of it, I hate college.
What to confess?
All right, you got a couple seconds.
I confess that I have no confessions that I can think of, and it makes me sad.
All right, and thanks for enjoying our weekly segment of Confession Corner. I know that's one of the main reasons you guys come to listen to the Common Geeking Program, and now we're going to move on to the summary of the topic.
Should be a new thing.
Okay, so Guardians of the Galaxy. Is a movie directed and written by James Gunn, probably written by some other people too, because one person doesn't just write a movie anymore, which is good because, you know, one person can make more mistakes anyway. So it came out 2014.
That's the same year that Boyhood came out. I did not even realize that.
Do you guys remember 2014? So nostalgic.
Not even so nostalgic.
That was a good year for movies.
I'm so nostalgic for 2014.
Yeah. It was a time before the Trump presidency, so nostalgic. Obama was still president back then.
Dude.
He was also still president like half a year ago.
It feels so much longer.
Hey guys, this isn't Common Political Program. This is Common Geeking Program. All right.
Do you guys remember that time that we recorded episode 21 like 4 weeks ago?
Oh my god,
it was a crazy time.
You remember when it edited itself? It
so much
nuts.
Nostalgia. Okay, so back to the we're wasting valuable time here.
So much nostalgia for the poor person who ends up editing this.
No, we're actually not wasting valuable time because this is gonna be a pretty quick summary. Guardians of the Galaxy is a film in the Marvel Cinematic Universe franchise of films, but it doesn't yet directly tie in to any of the other movies, so like Iron Man doesn't show up or anything like that, so it pretty much is a standalone. And when it was like announced and when it was being marketed and stuff, a lot of people, myself included, were like, what's Guardians of the Galaxy? I don't know what this is at all. Like, and I read comics and stuff growing up. Like, I knew who Drax the Destroyer was. Had no idea he was on some weird team. I'd never heard of Guardians. So when it was coming out, I was like, oh, I guess this is going to be some thing that I don't know anything about. And I think a lot of people were going into it not knowing a lot about it. I mean, what about you guys?
Yeah, same.
Same.
I just recognized Rocket Raccoon because he was in Marvel vs. Capcom 3.
Yeah, I didn't read comics growing up, and so that was... I was just like, a movie and with people. Looks fun.
And Jeffrey?
I did not know about any of the characters. I knew about Thanos, but Thanos is not a member of the Guardians of the Galaxy. He was just in the movie.
The reason I want to talk about it in reference to nostalgia is because the movie has this soundtrack called The Awesome Mix Volume 1. Sorry, I'm a little phlegmy.
Me too.
Same. Yay, phlegm. I'm actually not phlegmy, but I shouldn't have said that.
And it's filled with a bunch of, like, popular, like, radio hits from, like, the late 70s and throughout the 80s. The main character, Peter Quill, or as he's also known, Star-Lord.
Star-Lord.
Who?
Well, Star-Lord, man. Legendary outlaw.
Played by the lovely and dashing Chris Pratt. There, we said his name, now he'll listen to the podcast.
Just like Mark Hamill.
Just Yay. Like Mark Hamill.
All the nostalgia I have from episode 10.
Do you guys remember Mark Hamill?
Do you guys remember episode 10?
I do. So much nostalgia.
That was a stupid episode.
What was episode 10 again?
The Star Wars one.
Oh, yeah.
The one we also have a lot of nostalgia about.
I'm gonna throw a little teaser in here. And you can put this at the end as like the stinger if you want, because that's where you put teasers. But it's not going
to
be funny.
Who are you talking to? Who's editing this episode?
I'm talking to the podcast. I'm going to do another Star Wars episode sometime. It may be just as bad as the first one. So.
Oh, I'll have to come back on and rep some other fucking... I'll rep Beast Machines that time.
So the movie, back to the part that'll be in the podcast instead of cut out, uses a soundtrack of like popular songs from like the late 70s and the 80s. And it's songs that like, you know, maybe younger people like millennials and younger might not know, but maybe like they've heard them, you know, in other media, but like people a little bit older, even some people our age, but definitely like, you know, Generation X, yeah, them and older would definitely know these songs. And they're used in such a way that evokes a lot of like feelings of nostalgia as you're watching the movie. The character, Peter Quill, he has a lot of nostalgia and sentimentality attached to these songs, because throughout the film, he's got them on like a mixtape and he's like playing them.
Are we going to actually summarize the movie?
Yeah, we can let's do it, Jeff. Go ahead. Okay. Why don't you take the reins?
Cool. Talking about Peter Quill there, I think that it's really important about his nostalgia and the fact that he's got like a Walkman and tape decks and stuff, because the last time he was on Earth was like an age where all of those, you know, it was like, when was he abducted? 84?
I feel like it was 87 for some reason. But again, I saw this movie in 2014, so what do I know?
88. Just looked it up.
He was like 8 or something when he when his mother died.
He would have been 8, yeah.
So his mother got cancer and died, and that's how the movie opens. And he's like really pissed, and he's listening to his Walkman. So he runs out of the hospital and immediately gets abducted by aliens, right?
Hey, when that happens.
Yeah, one of them's Michael Rooker.
Yeah, Michael Rooker. Yondu Dantu, the character played by Michael Rooker, was one of the original Guardians of the Galaxy. I have looked up since. The team is actually completely different than the original team.
That's very interesting.
Then we see Peter Quill dancing around to Come and Get Your Love, which kind of sets the tone for the movie with all these nostalgic songs that Eddie's been talking about, right?
Like Jeff was saying, that kind of sets the tone. We've got this character who has all these like sentimental and nostalgic feelings for the past, especially like his past and Earth's past.
And they're all like tied to his mother.
And that allows the audience to, you know, like connect with him and feel those same feelings through him. Sorry, my throat is like closing.
Need some of that
It's
inhaler?
Okay. Yeah. I'm good. No, I'm good. I feel like the reason the movie makes such use of it is because we've got all these unknowns, like all these like characters and situations and places that the audience has no idea what they are, what's going on. But we've got this one character and these songs that anchor us in these places, that allow us to dive deep into the universe that's set up. And I think it's very effective.
Yeah, it's a very smart choice.
I also feel like tonally, Guardians of the Galaxy also like it's being nostalgic for like pulpy sci-fi stuff, you know, from like the 70s and stuff, which is probably why its choice of music comes from the 70s.
So, I mean, that's kind of most of the things I wanted to hit on. And it's more a summary of like the themes than it is of the actual plot, because the plot, I feel, isn't the most relevant thing to the topic.
I don't know. There could be ways to connect it. I think we should at least run down the very basic plot. Like, I guess we don't have to go into as much detail as I did, but I was just talking about the opening.
Yeah, I mean, sure. Do you guys want me to do that? Does someone else want to take a crack?
I could read the Wikipedia if you give me a second to pull it up.
Let's have Laura read the Wikipedia. All right.
Give me a sec.
Oh my god, the sniffles in this episode are so real.
What?
Even Alyssa's sick, and she's not even in this episode.
Yeah, I feel like we're all dying a little bit. Seriously, if you're not sick yet, I feel like you're going to get the germs through the computer. So I apologize in advance.
Y'all about to get a computer virus.
Hey,
cut the fuck up, Shatter.
Yuck.
Okay, hold on.
All right, we've got about 3 minutes, so read at an appropriate cool. pace.
All right. So Quill gets the orb. He is...
This is not a straight reading.
Faster.
Oh, should it be a straight reading? Oh, Jesus.
I okay. thought that was the joke we were going for, oh, okay. but it's whatever.
In 1988, followed by his mother's death, a young Peter Quill is abducted from Earth by the Ravagers, a group of space pirates led by Yondu, who don't, can't read that. 26 Udanta. Years later, on the planet of Morag, Quill steals an orb but is attacked by Korath, a subordinate to the fanatical Kree Ronin. Although Quill escapes with the orb, Yondu discovers his theft and issues a bounty for his capture while Ronin sends an assassin Gamora after the orb. While Quinn is attempting to sell the orb in Xandar, a capital of Nova Empire, Gamora rushes to him and steals it.
She
a fight ensues, drawing a pair in a pair of bounty hunters
of
an and
an ugly
cybernetically
situation.
Modified raccoon rocket. What?
Rocket raccoon.
There should have been a comma there. And the tree-like humanoid Groot. Nova Corp officers capture the four, detain them in the
Groot's Vin Diesel.
In the kiln. A powerful inmate there, Drax, attempts to kill Gamora due to her association with Ronan, who killed his family.
Facts.
Quill convinces Drax that Gamora can bring Ronan back to him, though Gamora reveals that she's betrayed Ronan, unwilling to let her use the orb's power.
It's a powerful orb.
Learning that Gamora has a buyer for the orb, Quill, Rocket, Groot, and Drax work with her to escape the kiln in Quill's ship, the Milano. Great name.
It's named after Alyssa Milano, who Peter Quill had a crush on as a child.
Not the cookie.
Ronan meets with Gamora's adoptive father, Thanos, who discusses her betrayal. Quill's group flee to Nowhere, a remote criminal outpost in the space of the giant severed head of the Celestial. I have no idea what's happening. A drunken Drax summons Ronan while the rest of the group meet Gamora's contact, the collector Tantid.
Big mistake.
He opens the orb, revealing the Infinity Stone, an item of immeasurable power that destroys all but the most powerful beings who wield it. Tyven's tormented assistant Karina grabs the stone, triggered an explosion that engulfs Tyven and Artarth.
Real big explosion.
I can't words.
It's all purple and shit.
Ronan arrives and easily defeats Drax while the others flee the ship, pursued by Ronan's fathers and Gamora's adoptive sister Nebula. Nebula destroys Gamora's ship, leaving her floating in space, and Ronan's fighters capture the orb. Quill contacts Yondu before following Gamora into space, giving her his helmet to survive. Yondu arrives and retrieves the pair. Rocket, Drax, and Groot threaten to attack Yondu's ship to rescue
them. Quill almost dies.
Quill negotiates a troop, promising the orb to Yondu. Quill's group agrees that facing Ronan means certain death, but they can't let him use the Infinity Stone destroy the galaxy. On Ronan's flagship, the Dark Aster, Ronan
you might say they're guarding it.
Taking himself. He contacts Thanos, threatening to kill him after first destroying Xandar, hateful of her adoptive father. Nebula allies with Ronan. The Ravagers and Quill's group join with the Nova Corps to confront the Dark Aster at Xandar, and Quill's
everybody
group
hates Thanos. It's like a young Chris
Ronan
Rock.
Ronan uses empowered
Thanos
Warhammer to destroy
asshole.
The Nova Corps fleet. Gamora fights and defeats Nebula, who then escapes with the Griffin, themselves outmatched by Ronan's power.
She loses a hand.
The Ravager ship through the Dark Aster. The damaged Dark Aster crash lands on Xandar, with Groot sacrificing himself to shield
it's
the group.
A really
Ronan,
big ship.
Ronan emerges from the wreck and prepares to destroy Xandar, but Quill distracts him, allowing Drax and Rocket
to
destroy Ronan's
Warhammer. He challenges him to a dance contest.
Quill grabs the freed stone, and with Gamora, Drax, and the Rocket sharing his burden, they use it to destroy Ronan. In the aftermath, Quill tricks Yondu into taking a container supposedly containing the stone and gives the real stone to Nova Corps.
That dirty, rotten scoundrel.
Man, Yondu falls for that like, way too much.
As the Ravagers
times.
Leave Xandar, Yondu remarks that it turned out well that they did not deliver Quill to his father per their contract. Quill's group, now known as the Guardians of the Galaxy, have their criminal records expunged, and Quill learns that he's only half human, his father being part of an ancient unknown species. Quill finally opens the last present he received from his mother, a cassette tape filled with her favorite songs. In the post-credit scene, Tyven sits with his destroyed archive and two of his living exhibits, a canine cosmonaut and an anthropomorphic duck. What? I don't remember
Howard
that
the
at
Duck.
All.
Yeah.
It was Howard the Duck, yeah. I remember because Chowder screamed, "Howard the Duck!" when that happened when we were watching it the first time.
I recall doing that too,
That's
yeah.
That's amazing. So you clocked in about a minute over time, but let's give her a round of applause.
Now we just have to edit out the part where she says she's going to read the Wikipedia article and just be like, oh, does anyone want to take it up? And then just have Laura start talking.
All right, so that was probably one of the best summaries we've ever done on this podcast. So now we move on to the domains in which each of my lovely representatives here will detail to you a brief summary of their domain and how it pertains to the topic. So let's go ahead and have Jeffrey start that off. Jeffrey?
All right, so I am repping a movie called Boyhood, which I'm going to pull up the Wikipedia article of just so I can get the director's names right.
We should just read Wikipedia.
I think
articles
literally, instead of typing in Boyhood, I just started typing in Wikipedia. And instead I typed in Boyhood instead of Boyhood. Okay,
I think we're really
so
on our
Boyhood.
Game today.
Yeah, for reals though. Boyhood is a film that came out in 2014 that was written and directed by Richard Linklater, which I believe is how you pronounce his name. I've never tried to say it out loud before.
Hey, you gave it your best try.
Yeah, Linklater. What's interesting about this movie is that the entire premise is that he shot it over the course of, looks like, 11 years. Started filming it in 2002 and ended filming in 2013 for it to air in 2014. Whoa. And the story follows the life of a boy named... Jesus, I don't remember his name.
A boy named Jesus.
Mason boy Evans, yeah. His name is Hood. And he grew up in the hood, except not. He grew up in Texas. It follows the life of a boy named Mason as he grows up. So the film actually sees the actor age with the movie, which is really cool. The basic plot of the movie is that he's basically just growing up and his parents are divorced and his mother kind of gets involved with a lot of different bad individuals who end up being drunks and stuff like that.
Would you say it's a coming of age story?
Yeah. I was going to say that.
Get it? Because
because
he literally comes.
Comes of age. Yeah, well, yeah, that's why the coming of age stories are called coming of age stories.
That wasn't really a pun.
Yes, and that's coming from Chowder. So yeah, it's a coming of age story. For me, I'm relating it to this because it's got a lot of really nostalgic moments. Because let me just look up the age of the actor who plays Mason Evans, Eller Coltrane, which is a fucking weird name. But I'm pretty sure he's almost the exact same age as us. Yeah, he was born like 3 months before I was. He was born in August of 94. So
now you all know which month Jeffrey was born in.
Yeah, unless I mathed wrong, which I think I did, actually.
Jeffrey, yeah, don't tell them if you mathed incorrectly.
Anyway, so it's a really nostalgic story for me because just a lot of the background details are things that I associate a lot with my childhood. Like the snacks that he eats, the music that he listens to, just like in Guardians of the Galaxy. Like I remember...
And which snacks are those?
I'm pretty sure there's a scene where he's eating like Grips. Do you remember Grips?
Do you guys remember Grips?
Yeah, right? Grips.
No, I don't remember Grips, actually.
I don't remember Grips. They were a product of Cheez-Its. They were like... Very, very tiny Cheez-Its. The supposed gimmick with the snack is that it was supposed to play off of like the whole throw the popcorn into the air and catch it in your mouth trick. So they were like designed so that you could do cool tricks and then catch them in your mouth.
Okay, it was for kids that were extreme.
I'm guessing this was the 90s because that sounds like very 90s.
Yeah, early 2000s because the movie started in 2002.
If Grips had come out later, I think they would have been more successful. Because now we've got all these like dumb like challenge things. There would have been like the Grips challenge where you tried to do the most impressive catch.
Yeah, it was a little before the days of YouTube challenges. I actually, for some really gross nostalgia, a couple of years ago, I found a packet of Grips in the couch cushions of my couch.
Oh, at home. No!
Did you eat it?
No, of course not.
Did I eat it?
I don't know.
That's pretty good.
So anyway, the plot of the movie is largely incidental. I think that they purposely tried to keep the plot sort of basic so that it could be relatable to a lot of people. Because, like, you know, I don't really relate to the whole, like, having divorced parents and all that nonsense going on, right? But I definitely relate to, like, a lot of things he's going to. I feel like, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like this is a cliche sort of from the 90s of having the main character be an aspiring photographer. Does anyone, I don't know, because I feel like...
I feel like that was a thing, yeah.
When Rugrats All Grown Up came out, Tommy Pickles was like, he was into photography. And I can't think of specifically any other things like that, but I feel like that was like a trope to have like the protagonist
be an aspiring photographer in high school. School.
I don't know what's happening.
Well, fuck. Laura, we were having silence. Like, did he stutter?
No.
Do you guys remember that time when we were all really quiet? I miss that time.
Me too.
Anyway, all right, up next.
That was a perfect opportunity for an awkward pause.
Up next, let's have Laura talk about her domain for this episode and summarize it and tell us how it relates to the theme of nostalgia and Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah, so I am talking about Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time.
One of the greatest games ever made.
It is. It literally is. Some reason, the first time I said that when I was introducing my topic, I was like, did I just say that right? It sounded wrong in my head. I did. My brain's just fried, I guess. Anyway, so the reason I chose Ocarina of Time is because it is the greatest game ever. And it's actually the first video game that I ever really played. Like, I played some, like, Where in Time is Carmen Sandiego. Like, that was pretty much it.
That was a great game.
It was a great game. I keep on trying to get it onto my Mac, and it's like, you need a Windows 95. And I'm like, but why? True story. So I didn't grow up with a TV. Like, I didn't have any, I wasn't allowed to see movies, so I didn't have any gaming systems.
Are you okay?
I'm, like, kind of okay. I don't know. All
right, that's good.
I feel like I made it out the other side. I can go into more detail. The school that I went to was a little bit odd, and their philosophy was that you can't watch TV or movies or anything. Oh. So I didn't.
God damn.
Well, did you turn out super smart?
I'm doing all right.
All right. You hear that, guys? Don't let your kids watch TV or movies. Do let them play Ocarina of Time, though.
They didn't actually let me play Ocarina of Time. What I did was snuck down the street to my friend Sophie's house, and we played it in her basement with her brother.
Sophie sounds like a
brother. How does your school enforce you playing video games on your own time?
It's like a self-monitoring thing. So if your parents enroll you in the school, they expect the parents to kind of monitor their kids not to watch TV. And it worked out pretty well for my family because our TV broke when we moved, and so my parents just never got a new one. They were like, well, I guess we're not supposed to have one anyway, so.
Interesting.
We just didn't have a TV in the house until I was like a junior college.
Do you guys remember childhood when you either did or didn't watch TV? Good times.
Super nostalgic. Those are good times, yeah.
So I used to go to my friend Sophie's house, and her brothers were actually the first ones that played it, and I would watch them play. This was probably when I was in, like, early middle school. And then, like, I basically read the strategy guide front to back and, like, memorized everything. And every time they got stuck on a puzzle, I would, like, go through the strategy guide and be like, I got this because I remember the strategy guide. And then I got old enough that I got to play a little bit. And then, like, many years went by because I didn't have a Nintendo 64. And then I got one. And that was, like, the first game that I got. And then for my birthday, my boyfriend a couple years ago got me a 3DS with Ocarina of Time. So I was playing it for the first time since I was in, like, 8th grade, maybe. And I was like, holy shit, this game is so good. And part of that is the music. And I'm not going to go into a whole lot of detail about the game because either you know it or you don't. And if you don't know it, I'm so sorry. And it just, like, has the best music. And so you're wandering around for the time as a fairly open world, just because it wasn't, like, you didn't have to go in, like, straight lines and stuff. And so you just wandered around and, like, listened to this music and, like, got to meet all these, like, cool characters and different types of beings. I don't know what to call them, like, creatures, I guess. And so that, like, the music is really what fully
I don't know what to call them, creatures, I guess. Creatures, humans.
Well, they're definitely not human.
I know.
We can call the Gorons human, but I guess people is fine. The music was such an integral part of the game, and I think that's one of the things that the studio does best, is just have this amazing music that just makes you feel like a part of the game. So I figured, if we're talking about nostalgia, not only is this game super nostalgic for me specifically, but the music in it is, I think, what makes it so great. Like, they made a whole orchestra of Legend of Zelda songs that they go around and, like, play the music all around the world. So the music is a huge part of the game.
I think another thing is that one of the main mechanics in Ocarina of Time is that the main character, Link, jumps between being a little kid and destroyed future.
Nostalgic about being a little kid.
That's so true.
Yeah.
And the way that he goes back and, well, no, that's not true. But the, like, one of the main mechanics of the game also is that he plays an ocarina, so he's playing the music himself.
All right, so that was fantastic. We're having a great episode so far, guys.
Energy. We're all healthy. All
right, so let's get Taimul to do his domain. Taimul, what do you got for us this week with Shovel Knight?
All right, Shovel Knight is an indie game developed by Yacht Club Studios. It's a 2D side-scrolling platformer about the main character, Shovel Knight, who, after losing his friend slash, I guess, possible love interest, Shield Knight, he retires, but then comes out of retirement when an evil character named the Enchantress comes and, like, takes over the land with the help of 8 knights called the Order of No Quarter. And,
That's amazing.
So, Shovel Knight is pretty much a big homage to, like, retro video games.
And when did it come out?
It came out June 26, 2014.
Wait a minute, and when did when did the remake of Ocarina of Time come out?
Yeah, okay, hold on. I'm looking this up.
Oh god!
Note to the editor, if she says 2014, put the X-Files music in.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say.
2011.
Oh! Can we just edit it?
June 16th of 2011.
Back to Shovel Knight. So Shovel Knight is a homage to retro video games. It's done in the 8-bit style. The main character has a similar color scheme to Mega Man. The main mechanic is borrowed from the NES adaptation of DuckTales. The music sounds retro, looks retro. It's got the tone of retro video games. But the thing about Shovel Knight, it's not content to just wallow in nostalgia. What sets it apart is that it takes the old school video game formula and like tries to improve on it. Like it takes what worked about old school video games, but like ditches what didn't work about those games, and while also adding like newer design stuff that wasn't prevalent in back then. So, you know, when Shovel Knight dies, when Shovel Knight
dies,
I'm just
trying to make it so it's not one person talking forever. Jeez, I'm crow.
I'm sorry.
And now I'm just trying to make it sound like I'm yelling at you. Jeez, I'm crow.
So the colors in Shovel Knight, it's still 8-bit, but they utilize more colors than what was possible on the NES. There's parallaxing for the background, which wasn't possible on the NES. The music is more akin to 16-bit or 32-bit than 8-bit. When Shovel Knight dies, it uses a system that's more similar to Dark Souls, where Shovel Knight loses his equipment and starts off at the last checkpoint he was at. And like the difficulty curve is more fair than what NES games back then were. And these are just a few examples. Basically, Shovel Knight doesn't quite aim to be an accurate depiction of old school video games, but rather try to live up to the memory of nostalgic video games.
Oh god.
Yeah, I like to call this episode Nostalgia.
That would be good if we weren't definitely going to edit out all the sneezes and coughs. Yes.
Oh, we definitely won't.
Well, the computer will, though.
Oh, the computer will, yeah. Because our super sophisticated program. Guys, do you remember when we had to edit these episodes by ourselves?
Oh my god.
Those were the days.
Those were the good old days. Maybe we should go back to that.
We should have just gave up on finding an editor a while ago.
Dude, yeah, but isn't it different when it's like handcrafted episode of podcast, you know?
Yeah.
I wonder how Mark Hamill feels about it, because, you know, I know he was in like the original Star Wars and they all used like practical effects and stuff. So.
Yeah, but he's feeling pretty nostalgic about it. Nostalgic.
Mark, you know, when you hear this, give me a call, man. I'll answer.
I bet he knows the number.
What an honor.
Well, if I'm not too busy. But anyway, all right, let's move into the discussion section of the podcast. And I actually want to pick up right where Time Wool left off. He was talking about how Shovel Knight, you know, uses nostalgia in like a really good way to enhance the thing and like give it a certain tone and a feeling. And I think for Guardians of the Galaxy, I think that's true as well. You know, like they utilize the nostalgia factor really well, I think. And there are definitely bad examples of it. Nobody really brought one today. But in Guardians, they use the Walkman that he has and the references that Peter Quill makes and the music that they play as like ways to kind of, like I said before, anchor you into the scene. But then they build out this whole new universe and story that we as the audience don't know before going in.
Yeah, yeah.
And they use it as a way to help us connect to the characters rather than just being like a rehashing of something that we've already seen. I think that's a really good way to go about using nostalgia. So if Jeff and Laura had some comments on that, or if Taimul wanted to elaborate a little bit more on that specific point, I'd really like to hear about that, guys.
So when you're banking on nostalgia, the problem you run into is that you're not just competing with the stuff that came before, you're competing with people's memory of what came before.
Yeah.
Like, memory's kind of selective. People will remember all the great stuff about the past, but then they'll, like, ignore what kind of sucked about it, too.
And that is one of the main reasons nostalgia works.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Take, for example, like, old school video games. People love that old school video games didn't hold your hand. They love the look of 8-bit. They love the sound of 8-bit. But, like, the problem with old school video games was they were often way too tough than they had any right to be, to the point of frustration. It was a way for the developers to artificially lengthen the game because these games would have been beaten in a few minutes otherwise.
Mm.
While some games could make use of the 8-bit look to incredible effect, like, you know, Mega Man and Mario, and but other games look
like crap.
Yeah, exactly.
The original Legend of Zelda, I think, looks kind of bad.
Yeah.
I'm not a fan.
Yeah.
The whole, like, shooting swords mechanic was always real weird to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's like, hey, let's just make this game that has a bunch of people who shoot stuff, but this guy fights with a sword.
That shoots stuff.
So he'll shoot swords.
That was like a common thing at the time where, like, people would throw swords and daggers in games. You did it in Castlevania.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's weird.
I mean, it was always a goal of mine to learn how to knife throw, so.
Because of that reason.
And, like, with the original Zelda, everyone remembers the freedom that the game had. You know, how you could go anywhere and stuff. People don't often remember, like, how dull the dungeon layouts could be, how frustrating combat was because you were so depowered and stuff.
Like, if you didn't know where you were supposed to go, like, I've spent a long time wandering around being like, I don't know anything.
Yeah, same.
Which is not great.
Yeah, and to, like, tie that back to, like, Guardians of the Galaxy. Guardians of the Galaxy is fighting multiple fronts here. It's competing against the Guardians of the Galaxy comic books and people's memory of that. Competing against old campy sci-fi stuff, as well as just competing against all those old pop songs and stuff.
Yeah,
I think it was a really smart choice for them to use the Walkman and the music that they did, just because the disconnect or the comparison of having like a super sci-fi future world where everything was crazy and there were flying spaceships and like a cassette tape, it just really worked.
Yeah,
like it made you like, what?
Yeah.
And it immediately took you off center, so it made you think about things differently and like really opened you up to the world in a great way. So I think for sure they did a good job.
Yeah, that was one of the things I really liked, that in Guardians they don't just play those songs as part of the background, they're a part of the story.
Yeah, they're diegetic.
Yeah, so it feels earned.
It's your word of the night.
It's a good word. I like it.
It doesn't feel like, oh, they're using these songs to make me like the movie. It feels like, oh, I like these songs and they're in this movie.
Yeah.
You feel a little bit more inclined to kind of dance around to it with Peter Quill also doing that. Yeah. I agree that I think it was a really smart decision to do that, because I think that a lot of the other stories in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, like Iron Man and Captain America, definitely have a lot of people watching it for nostalgia's sake. So taking the Guardians of the Galaxy, which is a lesser known comic in the Marvel Universe, and kind of pushing this music in there is sort of forcing the audience to be like, hey, you should feel nostalgic about this too. So it kind of keeps that trend of the MCU being a very nostalgia-based universe.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't even think of that. That's a really good point.
That's true, yeah.
It's not like the same nostalgia, because you're nostalgic for the music and not the story, whereas in the other ones, you're nostalgic for the story.
So they trick you.
It kind of keeps it, yeah, they trick you. So I think that's really interesting.
Like we were saying before, with the sound of the music being like diegetic, it feels authentic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It doesn't feel like they're using it to an end. It feels like it's part of this universe.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that could probably relate really well to your domain, Jeffrey, Boyhood, where all the nostalgia there, none of it is even slightly manufactured.
Yeah.
It is all 100% authentic because of the way they filmed the movie. So can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I think that's actually really interesting, because I really wonder how much of that was accidental. If they were just like pointing the camera at everyday life and having it happen, or if they were... Like, I want to know whether the director was purposely trying to pick out things that he was guessing were going to be nostalgic, just based on like trends and stuff. You know what I mean? Like pointing it at snacks and old versions of iPods and shit like that.
Well, technology, I think, is an easy guess to say this is going to change.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah, yeah.
But stuff like food and TV shows, that's...
Yeah.
Like, you never know. Ovaltine has been around for fucking ever. And it's still around.
True. That's a good point with TV shows, because you don't know what's going to have left a lasting impact. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, I think what the director was going for was creating a sense of place and a sense of time, you know, intentionally dating that piece. And
yeah, for sure.
When we look back on it, it is nostalgic simply because what was modern then is old to us now.
Yeah. It's crazy.
Because there are just so many details that it seems like more background details are present than would naturally be if they were just shooting the scene. So I feel like he must have had that sort of idea in mind of like, oh, make sure we get all the shit that's like the age right now in shots.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe they, you know, had a bunch of other shots that had things in them that nobody remembers that they just didn't end up using in the movie. Or maybe we didn't notice because no one remembers them.
Right. Yeah.
Hashtag bring grips back.
Yeah.
Hashtag bring back grips.
Yeah, because apparently no one remembers grips. Grips were the shit, man.
Like, dude, grips were the shit. Hashtag bring back grips.
Yeah, Eddie remembers grips.
I don't even think I've ever heard of them.
Really?
Yeah, this is the first time.
I don't actually remember them either, yeah.
That's why we gotta bring them back.
Gotta bring back grips. Go check my couch cushions.
Yeah.
Dude, I remember grips vividly.
They were kind of a middle school era thing.
There were different kinds, too. They weren't all Cheez-Its. There were grips of, like, Chips Ahoy.
Wait, were they, like, shaped in, like, hexagons, or...?
They were, like, hexagonal, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, they were little tiny hexagons.
Oh, those things! Oh my god.
Dude, you gripped them, and you flipped them.
Yeah, and you, like, flick them into your mouth.
I'm not on board yet. I just don't remember.
Well, Laura, they probably, you know, in your school where they
probably didn't let them.
You weren't allowed to watch TV. You probably never saw any commercials for them.
That's actually true. I definitely did not see commercials for them.
Because I think that's part of the thing. I mean, not to talk too much about fucking grips, but that's one of the things that made grips memorable is that the commercials were so boss.
Yeah.
Okay. So actually, that does bring us to a question that I wanted to bring up.
Oh, shit. Turn this podcast into grips.
Very astute observation about the grips commercials, Jeffrey, that they were, in fact, boss. No, so it actually brings me to a topic of, like, marketing. So with Guardians, nostalgia plays a part in the marketing. Not a huge part, but all the trailers played Hooked on a Feeling by Blue Suede.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's been stuck in my head the entire episode that we've been talking about this.
Yeah, the Uga Chaka part is iconic.
That was heavily a part of the marketing of the film. So I wanted to ask, like, when Boyhood, when the trailers were coming out, or when trailers and ads for Shovel Knight were coming out, or for, say, like, the remake of Ocarina of Time, do you guys recall specifically if and how nostalgia was used as kind of a draw to get people to watch the movie or play the game?
Well, with Shovel Knight, it's common amongst indie games to, like, build themselves on retro video game aesthetics. Shovel Knight definitely, like, marketed itself as a sort of nostalgia trip by being this big homage to, like, a variety of different old school games. You know, when you see gameplay footage of it, the first thing people think of is, like, the NES adaptation of DuckTales because... because it involved Shovel Knight using his shovel to, like, bounce off enemies and obstacles like a glorified pogo stick.
All right, so what about Boyhood and Ocarina of Time?
I gotta be honest, I kind of continued on the whole thing where I didn't have any sort of cable. I just don't have cable. Like, I don't have time for that shit. It's too expensive. So I have ad-free Hulu and Netflix is pretty much how I get all of my media.
So Laura's never seen a commercial in her life.
So I've literally never seen a commercial.
Lucky you.
She wouldn't even know if grips came back.
Yeah.
I wouldn't even know. It would just be a total thing.
Oh my god, we gotta start paying people who are around Laura to start eating grips if she thinks they came back. She has no idea.
So, yeah, like, I just didn't really know. I don't even think I realized that they had come out with a remake of it.
Yeah.
And I must have known before I got it. But, like, I didn't have a 3DS until Charles got it for me with Ocarina of Time. So, like, my advertising was, it's your birthday, which is super exciting. Who doesn't learn birthdays? And here's a new system. And you've never owned your own gaming system. And here's a game that you loved. And I was like, oh, my God. So my personal advertising was super nostalgic because it was just all about having fun. And the 3D was so good. But, I mean, I'm sure what they put was the updated graphics and just how you get the exact same story, which I think is incredibly important, because I think sometimes people make remakes of things and try to change it, but you get the exact same story, but it just looks absolutely beautiful.
Yeah.
It's a really, really pretty game. So even if you're not super interested in the gameplay itself, it's one of those games you can just wander around and like look at the stars. Like you walk around Hyrule yeah. Field and like look at the sky.
Does it look yeah. the way that your brain made it look when you played the original?
I like think it looks better. Like, I'm sure that it looks better than what I would have remembered it, because they just did so much with the texture and the colors and the skies and everything.
Nice.
And so I think that they just did, I mean, I think I don't know why I can't remember the name of the company. It's driving me, it's...
Nintendo?
Is that the studio that comes out with it, though?
Nintendo!
Is it Nintendo Studios? Okay, it is.
Yeah, it's a first-party game.
Guys, we can't give her too much shit. She's never seen a commercial in her life. She doesn't know what Nintendo is.
I've never seen a commercial.
I wasn't giving her shit.
It was preemptive. I was about to give her shit.
It just came out of the shop.
No, so Nintendo produces some games in-house.
Yeah, okay.
Like Mario and Zelda.
That's what I thought, but it was yeah. You guys are always talking about the producers and the games and like all these things. I'm like, I just play the game and like have fun. And I was like, fuck, am I like completely missing something?
No, sorry if we are like butts.
Huge nerds.
I am like yeah. a surface level nerd.
Sorry if we're geeks. It's pretty common around here on this program.
Yeah, it's fine. I just love the program.
Another cool thing about Ocarina of Time was just the timing of when the original version came out. Like, the original version came out around a time where most of the people who were kids playing the first Legend of Zelda game were, like, in high school or going off to college when they played Ocarina of Time.
Yeah.
Which hit a real chord with them because, you know, their experiences of growing up was paralleled in Link jumping between kid to adulthood.
Really powerful yeah. stuff.
Same thing with Boyhood. I mean, Boyhood's not a remake of anything, but I think that it was an intentional decision to have it be slated to come out around the time that we were all starting college. It came out between our freshman and sophomore year of college, so it's not exact on, but that's because they ended it when Mason got to college, and then
they had to edit the movie.
They had to edit the movie, right?
11 years worth of editing. Sweet Jesus, that must have been a nightmare.
I think that it was a very intentional decision to have it come out around college age for the people that grew up in the same time period as the movie.
Because
yeah. yeah. it's such like a transitional stage where everyone gets to a new place. They're feeling like they're able to reinvent themselves as people. It's a stage where everything's changing. So naturally, it's a really smart marketing decision to have this movie come out right when its target audience are getting to that age. Because yeah. it's right about the time that people are starting to feel nostalgic. Well, the first time. I guess people would also be feeling nostalgic in like their 40s or some shit. But filming a movie for like 40 years would have been difficult for the director.
Yeah, it's funny how nostalgia has changed. Like, you know, back then, being nostalgic at our age is kind of weird because we're pretty young.
Oh, God. Do you guys fucking remember when other people were nostalgic? Oh, shit. I think that one strange decision that the movie made is that the song that they used in all of the advertisements is a song called Hero by a relatively unknown band called Family of the Year that actually came out in 2012. So
that is weird.
Yeah, they kind of missed a cue on that.
Not to be confused with Hero by Nickelback.
Yeah, no, it was
I was thinking about Hero by Enrique Iglesias.
But a relatively known band called Nickelback. Eddie knows I don't know Nickelback. Do you remember, Eddie, do you remember that one moment in high school when you found out that I just was completely oblivious to the existence of Nickelback?
Yeah, Jeffrey didn't know that they existed. He also didn't know that people didn't like them.
Huh. That's surprising.
Oh, man. Talk about nostalgia.
Yeah, well, because he was talking about Comic Sans, and he's like, you know, I was like, why does everyone hate Comic Sans? He's like, you know, it's how people don't like Nickelback. And I'm just like, how people don't like what? This was like sophomore year of high school. And he was like, oh, you've probably heard their songs and just never associated them. And he played a couple songs, and I'm just like, never heard those songs.
God, that's like never seeing a commercial.
Yeah, it was a weird knowledge gap.
Laura, had you heard Nickelback growing up?
Yes, I was allowed to listen to music. I did hear Nickelback.
All right, so we are almost at time, but there is something else I wanted to touch on. I feel like a lot of times the nostalgia factor is used as a way to get people to see something or yeah. buy something.
Yeah, it's like a cheap way to get people interested in something because you play to these feelings that they've had and they don't have to do anything about it. Like, you just show somebody a bag of grips and all of a sudden they're like, oh shit, grips! Like, yeah. there's no yeah. effort involved.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I think we picked out some things where it shows that the nostalgia factor can be used well and effectively
yeah.
to make make a good piece of art or media. And yeah. Laura, if you want to keep going, I'm very sorry I cut you off.
No. That was pretty much the end of my story. I was just going to say that I think like Chowder's topic is probably the best example of the best way to use nostalgia.
Yeah. I think on the one hand, though, it's really the only decision that they could have made when making that game, though. Because like Chowder was talking about how they make the game really nostalgic by its graphics and how it looks and shit, but still update it. I don't know. That doesn't sound like a very unique thing for a nostalgia thing, because it's not like they were going to remake a game that had all the same problems as a game from that era. You know what I mean?
You'd be surprised how many like indie games will like fall into the same trap that those old retro games did.
Yeah, that's true. But anyway, I think like with Guardians of the Galaxy, it was kind of a necessary decision when pitting it up in the same universe as all of these heroes that are more recognizable and definitely have the nostalgic factor.
Yeah, they had to do something.
I think they had to shoehorn the nostalgia in there in some way, and I think that the music was a really clever way to do it that was really effective and pretty nuanced.
Is that in the comics in any way? Like, is that music something that comes up at all, or is it something that they just did creatively for the movie?
I'm very unsure.
I have no idea.
I'd imagine it's something they did creatively for the movie.
Yeah, I would guess.
Here's what I'll say. Fans of Common Geeking Program, tweet at us, at Geeking Program on Twitter. Let us know if those were part of the comic books. There, that's the first time we've ever done that. See if anyone tweets at us. I know Mark Hamill will.
I have an educated guess about that, though, because the time that all these comics come out, like especially Iron Man and Captain America and stuff, were a while ago.
Like pre-1970?
Yeah,
like the original Iron Man's backstory involved the Vietnam War.
Yeah. But like when the original Peter Quill was written, the nostalgic old music listening stuff must have been like fucking, you know, like shit that he wouldn't be able to carry around like a
Walkman. Yeah, right.
You know what I mean?
So I think that was pretty spicy. This is a good discussion. I think we wrapped up right about on time. Maybe a little over. Sorry, computer who's editing this. Okay, so now we get into the ratings section of the podcast.
Swiddly-doo.
And for first-time listeners, this is the section of the podcast where each rep will review the topic that I had them watch this week, the topic being Guardians of the Galaxy, and they're going to rate that on a scale from 1 to 5 mixtapes. So let's start with Jeffrey.
That was good.
Guardians of the Galaxy, as it is, as it exists, I would say 4 out of 5. And I'm going to stick with that, but I am going to talk about in terms of how it relates to nostalgia as well. It's a really good movie. It's a lot of fun, and they do a good job of, like Eddie said, anchoring you with this nostalgic feel. But I feel like it's almost just the music, and I get why it's that way, because it's not like Peter Quill had even...
He should have had a mullet.
That would have been spicy.
I mean, I guess he does do things like make references to old movies.
That's true, he does.
So I'm going to say 4 out of 5, because I think it's a fantastic movie. It's not like, you know, the most blow me out of the water thing I've ever seen, but at, like, especially the time that it came out.
Oh, were you nostalgic for that time?
We were all shut up. We were all expecting this movie to be kind of subpar, right? Because there was all these characters that we'd never met, and it was a really wacky premise with the talking raccoon and a tree and shit like that, right? I remember we all got out of that movie, and surprise, surprise, everyone but Colin was like, that was a fantastic movie. Yeah. And Colin was just like,
I forgot about
that. It sounds exactly like him.
Do you remember when we saw Guardians and Colin didn't like
it? Yeah.
Good times, man.
Remember when we all shat on Colin for everything he's ever done in his life?
Well, you know, he's the worst. So, Laura, why don't you go ahead? How many mixtapes?
I, again, haven't seen this movie since apparently 2014, which is quite a while ago now.
That's 3 years ago.
But I have a lot of nostalgia for it, and I remember just the best parts of the movie.
She was method acting by not watching it again.
Maybe. I can't tell you all my secrets.
It's for the next confessions.
But I do think it was a really good movie, and I think they just did such an incredible job of the music, and I do want somebody to tweet at us and let us know whether or not that was something that came from the comics, because damn, if that was somebody's original idea and it wasn't from the comics, they deserve maybe not a raise, because they probably made a lot of money already.
I think James Gunn is probably doing okay.
Right, exactly. So he doesn't need a raise, but he could use a pat on the back. And for that reason, and for the reason that I got to think about Ocarina of Time for the first time in a little while, I'm going to rate this topic also a 4 out of 5 cassette tapes.
All right, so Time Wall, let's go ahead and get your rating. How many mixtapes?
I would give it 4 mixtapes out of 5. I remember when I walked out of that movie, I felt that that was like my favorite of the Marvel Cinematic Universe movies. And
definitely up there.
Honestly, it still is my favorite.
Same, actually.
Yeah, it's just so different.
Yeah, it's like a really close competition between Winter Soldier and...
I love Winter Soldier.
With Guardians of the Galaxy, it had that style that I like. It had that sense of fun that I really like. So... yeah.
All right, next is where I rate the representatives.
Oh boy.
I'm going to pick one of them that did the best, and I'm going to give them the Gold Star Student Award, which this week will be the Golden Ooga Chaka.
Ooga Chaka, Ooga, Ooga, Ooga Chaka.
I don't know how you made that gold, but I'm very excited.
Really tough this week. I know we say that every week.
It's always true, though.
You guys all did a great job.
I always mean it when I say it.
I always mean it as well, okay? God.
Sorry.
Rude. Okay, anyway.
I hope that didn't influence your decision.
Maybe it did. All right, so really tough one this week. I think you all did a fantastic job, but I did have to make a decision in the end.
In the very end, in the last 5 seconds. Yeah. He's actually making the decision right now.
Yeah, he doesn't even know what he's about to say.
He's not sure.
Do you guys remember a few seconds ago when I said I was going to make a decision?
And then we cut you off? Yeah, I do remember that. Good times.
Good times.
Good times. All right, so I am going to this week give the Golden Ooga Chaka to one Jeffrey Leavitt.
Ah! Oh, this has been my first one in a while.
You all did fantastic. Main reasons is that Jeff kept getting us to discussion points that I already had planned to hit anyway. So he was really in sync with me this episode. You guys remember In Sync? Good times. So Jeffrey, if you'd like to give some kind of like acceptance speech or...
Yeah. Oh, hold on. I'm going to adjust my seat before I start talking so that there's not a bunch of... sounds in the background.
Diegetic sounds.
Thank you. I appreciate the Golden Ooga Chaka. It's a weird sounding word, so I like it because I like weird things. Like Guardians of the Galaxy. It's a great movie. What I'm going to say is, guys, do you remember the last time I got a Gold Star Award? Because it was a long time ago, and I'm feeling really nostalgic about episodes 5 and 6 right now. So thank you for bringing back those memories.
Hashtag fuck you.
What do you mean fuck you? You gave me one of those awards, you piece of shit. Don't you remember?
All right, well, that about wraps it up for us here at the Common Geeking Program this week. I'm going to turn my host voice back on. Thank you for listening. Again, my name is Edward Ryan, and this week's topic was Guardians of the Galaxy. You can check it out most places that you can watch movies or rent them. Our next episode is going to be hosted by...
Jeff. It's me.
Jeffrey Leavitt, and he'll be talking about...
kind of on a similar note, sort of. I'm going to be talking about Samurai Jack, with a specific focus on revival series. I haven't decided what specific episodes we're watching yet. It's a little bit of awkward timing because we're going to be recording this episode the week of the last episode of the new Samurai Jack series coming out, before it comes out. But you all will have watched it before you hear that episode, so...
All right, so make sure to get at least semi-caught up on Samurai Jack before that episode airs on June 9th. And if anybody listening wants to contact us, you can find us on Twitter and Facebook at Geeking Program, or email us at commongeekingprogram@gmail.com. If you're listening on iTunes, leave us a review. It is really the best way to get other people to see this podcast, is directly sharing it with them or leaving us a review on iTunes. And we super appreciate reviews. And you know what? If you leave the best review, a big league review, as some people would say, I'll shout it out next time I host an episode. Colin be damned.
Oh, shit.
And if you want to know more, go to commongeekingprogram.com. The end.
Oh, you guys remember shout-outs when shout-outs were a thing?
Oh, man, I love shout-outs. Oh, shit. Oh, my God.
This episode of the Common Geeking Program was hosted by Eddie Ryan,
joined by Jeff Leavitt,
Laura Kramer,
and Taimul Chaudhary. This episode is sponsored by
Poor Planning
and The Common Cold. The podcast is created and produced by
Colin Ketchinan
and Jeff Leavitt,
with this episode edited by Jeff Leavitt,
Colin Ketchinan,
and Matt Canavan,
and featuring original music
by Colin Ketchinan.
That's me.
If you like this show,
follow us,
tell your friends,
or leave a review.
We hope you tune in for our next episode on June 9th,
and thank you for listening to this.
Do you all have Chronograph open?
Yep.
Yep. Okay.
Yep. Yep.
Yep. All right, yep. Let's not randomly clap Taimul and make it difficult for the editor. Okay, he's doing it more. I hope he edits this episode. Okay, let's set up at 20. 5 seconds.
20? Oh, yeah, 20. Okay. I was looking at the minutes and I was like, what?
Wait, what? Wait.
Really? That's your 20?
Was it that off? Okay, we got to refresh this page.